Hello, my name is Poe Johnson, and I'm talking today with Frieder Nakke. Can you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Frieder Nakke as a visitor here, my last day in Dallas, Richardson, a visitor of the Arts and Technology Program. And I guess they have invited me because what I've done up to this point in my life is between mathematics, aesthetics, and art.
And just sort of a beginning question, how have you seen the trajectory of this relationship between mathematics and art change since you began working in the 1960s?
When I started, I think I was really starting from a mathematical investigation into certain processes in art. To which extent could you, with some hope for success, describe aesthetic processes in mathematical terms? I think that's my starting point. The trajectory to today is that I still believe that mathematics is important for aesthetic and artistic practice. However, I do not believe in a radical way of doing mathematics. Mathematics as a rational means, and certainly the most successful and most powerful one, but aesthetics and making art is much more than following mathematical principles.
So did you think at the time during the 60s that it should have been radical, or has this been something that you've always believed and has simply manifested itself differently now?
In my life, no, it was great. And therefore, I would not say, oh, it should have been different from the very beginning. Because if you start with something, even if later, much later or a little later only, you reject this, you go a totally different path, even if that is the case, it is good to try something that is different from what other people do. Because either you are successful, then it was very good, or it's not successful, then you have learned something.
Okay. So let me ask you, since mathematics was introduced into the aesthetics and into art, have you seen like concepts of beauty change over time? Have they sort of remained the same and they just sort of added a new element to them?
I think I've changed dramatically in many ways. Of course, you change just because you become older. But in the more narrow view of producing, as we called it, we did not use the term work of art. Mm. No, consciously, we called it an aesthetic object in order to avoid art, which would mean now we have to find out, is it or is it not art? And that we found is a stupid question. I have always hated it. I don't do that anymore. No, I'm not shy now to speak of a work of art, even though my position nowadays is that the artist is not generating art. What he, she are doing is they create a work. Mm. And it then depends on the public's, and say it more abstractly, the society's reaction. So the individual artist, or maybe a small group, are producing works, and society, the public, which is a complex process, turns that maybe, perhaps, into a work of art. It has to be acknowledged as a work of art and not just as a work that somebody cherishes very much, that he, she has put a lot of effort, energy, and everything into. But I'm sorry to say, the artist does not decide, is it art?
So you think that art then is a cultural construction?
Yes,
then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, and you can see this. No, some artists at one point in time were famous. Now their name has been totally forgotten. Their works are somewhere in the basement of the museum. So it is a timely process with ups and downs.
So would you then suggest that it is simply the public's perception of the art object, or the public gets to create the art, not the artists themselves.
Yeah, you radically you can say so, no? The work, the artist, the art, the public. Now, we should be careful, the public. No, that's not just everybody in New York, plus maybe San Francisco, and a few from Paris. It's complex. No, the art critics, of course, play an important role there. They have a societal function. Teachers play a great role there. Publishers, museums, of course, curators, no? And us, no, who go there or don't. No, the curator, three curators in a famous museum or gallery have put up this show and nobody comes. Mm-hmm. Devastating. No?
Yes, so, but to sort of unpack this concept of the public, so we live in a time now where the idea of the critic has sort of weakened, I think. So part of what sort of digital culture has done is sort of like it's brought people closer together, sometimes maybe not.
Yeah, you don't have a Clement Greenberg anymore.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So do you think then that means that the public is the best option to decide the art, since the public really now can, anybody with like a blog can theoretically be a critic. Should the public be the ones who get to decide art then?
I guess you say that with a smiling face that people listening to us cannot see now. But think of the power, the growing power, I don't really know where it will go, of the internet. Mm. And you're totally right. Now, when Joseph Beuys said, everybody, now he didn't say he's an artist, that is often misquoted, but he says everybody has the capacity to be an artist. And that's true, definitely. To be somebody who produces something that may be called art, that's our capacity in any case. So also the other way around, a critic. Mm. No? First of all, we are all critical against anything in art all the time because we say, I don't like it. Which is not a very critical statement, no, because who the hell is interested in me saying I like it or I dislike it? Not at all. If I give a reason, mm-hmm. oh, this I dislike because of X, Y, and Z in comparison to something A, B, that is a critical statement. I mean, when you think of what Clement Greenberg was a dictator. Mm-hmm. He was a dictator by saying, okay, unless you paint this way, I will not write a good critique about you. No, heaven's sake.
So to sort of jump off on that, though, one thing we also see with the sort of expansion of who gets to be a critic or perhaps who gets to sort of discuss art in a particular way is also this expansion of who gets to be an artist. And so some of your work deals with this when people sort of use algorithms to create objects. And so are those people who would use this algorithm or some sort of program to create art, are they then artists themselves, or do they have to then sort of go through the same gatekeeping system that says the public then gets to decide whether or not they're artists?
Mm. You need, I believe, particularly when you use algorithms in order to produce your works, you need to put that up in public, no? Mm-hmm. Absolutely necessary. You should look for the public getting a chance to say, do whatever with your work. Harold Cohn is in his early years as a computer artist, if we use that word, he was fantastic by taking that machine into the gallery, mm-hmm. into the museum. There's many pictures, photos, where you see him explaining what is happening there to young people, old people, everybody. He was really searching for, he was inviting people to come and talk with him himself, not a critic, not a curator in between, about this art. So I believe he pointed the right way. Artists, and this is happening now quite often in museums, you know, they have these extra programs. I have done that several times. Would you believe it? I have taught the staff of a museum in programming.
Really?
For a weekend seminar, no, we talked, no, and oh, everybody knows a little about lithography and painting, oils, and so forth. As well, do you also know something about algorithms? No, we have no idea. Well, I must tell you, no. How can you? You cannot judge this, no. So the algorithmic approach to art can be, I don't know if it's really true, can be a democratizing, is that a word?
Yes, what is now?
tendency, you know. Because art is an elitist endeavor, certainly in the millions that some people pay for a painting. Ridiculous. But art should be people's interest. No, at least in our rich countries, we must be careful, no, because in large parts of the world, what we are talking about now,
yes,
would just make no sense whatsoever.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So if art is sort of like, Lisa, we're talking about it from a kind of industrialized world perspective of art, is it then sort of art by necessity connected to the economy? Can we divorce the two? Because I think a lot of people would like to think of art as completely separate from money, right? Mm. But what you're suggesting is the opposite, yeah, that art and money are somehow intertwined almost intrinsically.
Yeah. I would love if it were separate. But that's a romantic and idealist position, so one cannot maintain it. And I tell you, I like the fact that my pieces now sell for much more than they sold when I produced them. No, maybe then I got 50 Deutschmark, German mark. Now I may get 3,000 euros. Mm-hmm. That's quite an increase. No, fantastic. I'm not free of liking this particular situation, but it's a ridiculous aspect. Abraham Mohl, a French theoretician, once said, oh, art will be democratized only when people doing their grocery shopping on a Saturday, now waiting to pay, see, oh, what's this? That's a new piece of art. I take it. Because the computer had just produced something, no? With a direct line to the cashier. No?
So do we see that, though? We kind of do see things like that now. Like, art is sort of democratized to the point we see it on, like, postcards or calendars.
Yeah.
Or you can sort of go in a supermarket and buy, like, a little sort of trinket that is in itself a kind of art object. So has it then been democratized? Are we at that point where it's become banal, that any art has become banal because we can put it on a keychain?
Yeah. Very interesting question. No, that would really need much more talking about, but you can say something quite clearly. The computer is the machine for banalizing things, clearly. It has always to do with standardizing. Now, art, I do not believe, in spite of what I said before, that art can be democratized. It may be, you know, that many people do some art of whatever kind, and many people come to become witnesses, become audiences for this or that kind of art. But nevertheless, art as such is a process of, you know, extreme avant-garde. Mao Zedong, who nobody now knows, was very simply, as always, speaking of two principal movements in the arts. One he called raising standards, and the other he called spreading standards. No, and he considered art, the entire process of art, to be a dialectics between these two. No, becoming better, doing something that nobody understands, and that's where art is happening. And then spreading, which means, oh, and now it's becoming banal, more or less. Mm-hmm.
So does that mean for all of the people who are sort of, who think of themselves as artists, who desire to be a part of this art community, that they, because their own expressions are sort of stuck in this banal state, that they need more work, or they just can't, they can never get there. That sort of the world is closed off to them.
Yeah. I think we often think of the Sunday painter in a kind of negative way. But there should be many Sunday painters. Mm. No? And with a computer in everybody's hands, this is happening.
Yes.
This is happening now. Everybody is doing something on whichever Facebook or other parts of the internet. So they are all producing something all the time. Mostly it's in vain, no, because nobody is listening. There we have the problem. No? If what you do because you want other people to become aware of, then you must try to get it into a place where people can come and become witnesses.
That'll be it for today. So we have run out of time. I want to thank Frieder Nocke for joining us today, and have a good day.
Thank you, Paul.